Nobody thought of it. He said, "Right. So you sent those two kids, all ready to do or die for good old Haven, and now one of them is dead and the other one's blind. It's shit, Bobby. I don't care who or what has taken you over. Part of you has to be inside someplace. Part of you has to realize that you people haven't been doing anything creative at all. Quite the opposite. You've been taking dumb pills and congratulating each other on how wonderful it all is. I was a crazy one. I kept telling myself it would be okay, even after I knew better, but it's the same old shit it always was. You can disintegrate people, you can teleport them to someplace for safekeeping or burial or whatever, but you're as dumb as a baby with a loaded pistol. I think you better shut up now, guard." "You didn't think of it," he said softly. "Jesus, Bobby, how can you even look at yourself in the mirror, any of you? I said, I think..." "Idiot savant," you once said. "It's worse. It's like watching a bunch of kids getting ready to blow up the world with soapbox derby plans. You guys aren't even evil. Dumb, but not evil. Guard, you're just a bunch of dumbbells with screwdrivers." He laughed. "Shut up!" she shrieked. "Jesus," guard said. "Did I really think Sissy was dead? Did I?" She was trembling. He nodded toward the photon gun. "So if I don't drink the beer and take the pills, you pack me off to Altair 4, right? I get to babysit David Brown until we both drop dead of asphyxiation or starvation or cosmic ray poisoning." She was viciously cold now, and it hurt. More than he ever would have believed, but at least she wasn't trying to read him. In her anger, she had forgotten. The way they had forgotten how simple it was to plug a battery-driven tape recorder into a wall socket with a DC converter between the instrument and the power source. "There really isn't an Altair 4, just as there aren't really any Tommyknockers. There aren't any nouns for some things, they just are. Somebody pastes one name on those things in one place, somebody pastes on another someplace else. It's never a very good name, but it doesn't matter. You came back from New Hampshire talking and thinking about Tommyknockers, so here, that's what we are. We've been called other things in other places. Altair 4 has too. It's just a place where things get stored, usually not live things. Attics can be cold, dark places." "Is that where you're from? Your people?" Bobby, or whatever this was that looked a bit like her, laughed almost gently. "We're not a people, guard. Not a race, not a species. Klaatu is not going to appear and say, 'Take us to your leader.' No, we're not from Altair 4. She looked at him, still smiling faintly. She had recovered most of her equanimity, and seemed to have forgotten the pills for the time being. "If you know about Altair 4, I wonder if you found the existence of the ship a little strange." Gardner only looked at her. "I don't suppose you've had time enough to wonder why a race with access to teleportation technology," Bobby wiggled the plastic gun slightly, "would even bother zipping around in a physical ship." Gardner raised his eyebrows. No, he hadn't considered that, but now that Bobby brought it up, he remembered a college acquaintance once wondering aloud why Kirk, Spock and company bothered with the Starship Enterprise when it would have been so much simpler just to beam around the universe. "More dumb pills," he said. "Not at all. It's like radio. There are wavelengths. But beyond that, we don't understand it very well, which is true of us about most things, guard. We're builders, not understanders. Anyway, we've isolated something like 90,000 clear wavelengths. That is, pro-linear settings, which do two things. Avoid the binomial paradox that prevents the reintegration of living tissue and unfixed matter, and actually seem to go somewhere. But in almost all cases, it isn't anywhere anyone would want to go."
"Like winning an all-expenses-paid trip to Utica, huh?"
"Much worse. There's a place which seems to be very much like the surface of Jupiter. If you open a door on that place, the difference in pressure is so extreme it starts a tornado in the doorway, which quickly assumes an extremely high electrical charge, which blows the door open wider and wider, like tearing a wound open. The gravity is so much higher that it starts sucking out the earth of the incursive world the way a corkscrew pulls a cork. If left on that particular station for long, it would cause a gravonic fault in the planet's orbit, assuming the mass was similar to Earth's, or, depending on the planet's composition, it might just rip it to pieces."
"Did anything like that come close to happening here?"
Guard's lips were numb. Such a possibility made Chernobyl seem as important as a fart in a phone booth.
"And you went along with it, guard?"
His mind screamed at him.
"You helped dig it up?"
"No.
Although some people had to be dissuaded from doing too much tinkering along transmitter-transmatter lines. She smiled. It happened somewhere else we visited, though.
What happened?
They got the door shut before Shatterday, but a lot of people cooked when the orbit changed. She sounded bored with the subject.
All of them?
Gardner whispered. Nope. There are still 9 or 10,000 of them alive at one of the poles, Bobby said. I think.
Jeez. Oh, my Jesus, Bobby.
There are other channels which open on rock. Just rock, the inside of someplace. Most open in deep space. We've never been able to chart a single one of those locations using our star charts. Think of it, Gard. Every place has been a strange place to us, even to us. And we are great sky travelers. She leaned forward and sipped a little more beer. The toy pistol, which was no longer a toy, did not waver from Gardner's chest. So, that's teleportation. Some big deal, huh? A few rocks, a lot of holes, one cosmic attic. Maybe someday someone will open a wavelength into the heart of a sun and flash-fry a whole planet. Bobby laughed, as if this would be a particularly fine jest. The gun didn't waver from Guard's chest, however. Growing serious again, Bobby said, But that's not all, Guard. When you turn on a radio, you think of tuning a station. But a band, megahertz, kilohertz, shortwave, whatever, isn't just stations. It's also all the blank space between stations. In fact, that's what some bands are mostly made up of. Do you follow?
Yes.
This is my roundabout way of trying to convince you to take the pills. I won't send you to the place you call Altair 4, Guard. There I know you'd die slowly and unpleasantly.
The way David Brown is dying.
I had nothing to do with that, she said quickly. It was his brother's doing entirely.
It's like Nuremberg, isn't it? Nothing was really anyone's fault.
You idiot, Bobby said. Don't you realize that sometimes that's the truth? Are you so gutless you can't accept the idea of random occurrence?
I can accept it. But I also believe in the ability of the individual to reverse irrational behavior,
he said. Really? You never could.
Shot your wife,
he heard the booger-picking deputy say.
Good fucking deal, huh? Maybe sometimes people start the old atonement boogie a little late,
he thought, looking down at his hands. Bobby's eyes flicked sharply at his face. She had caught some of that. He tried to reinforce the shield, a tangled chain of disconnected thoughts like white noise. What are you thinking about, Guard?
Nothing I want you to know,
he said and smiled thinly.
Think of it as, well, let's say a padlock on a shed door.
Her lips drew back from her teeth for a moment, then relaxed into that strange, gentle smile again. It doesn't matter, she said. I might not understand anyway. As I say, we've never been very good understanders. We're not a race of super Einsteins. Thomas Edison in space would be closer, I think. Never mind. I won't send you to a place where you'll die a slow, miserable death. I still love you in my way, Guard. And if I have to send you somewhere, I'll send you to... nowhere. She shrugged. It's probably like taking ether, but it might be painful. Agony, even. Either way, the devil you know is always better than the devil you don't. Gardner suddenly burst into tears.
Bobby, you could have saved me yay grief if you'd reminded me of that sooner.
Take the pills, Guard. Deal with the devil you know. The way you are now, 200 milligrams of Valium will take you off very quickly. Don't make me mail you like a letter addressed to nowhere.
Tell me some more about the Tommyknockers,
Gardner said, wiping at his face with his hands. Bobby smiled. The pills, Guard. If you start taking the pills, I'll tell you anything you want to know. If you don't... She raised the photon pistol. Gardner unscrewed the top of the Valium bottle, shook out half a dozen of the blue pills with a heart shape in the middle.
Valentine's from the Valley of Torpor,
he thought. Tossed them into his mouth, cracked the beer, and swallowed them. There went 60 milligrams down the old chute. He could have hidden one under his tongue, maybe, but six. Come on, folks, be real.
Not much time now. I vomited my belly empty. I've lost a lot of blood. I haven't been taking this shit, and so have no tolerance to it. I'm some 30 pounds lighter than I was when I picked up the first mandatory prescription. If I don't get rid of this shit quick, they'll hit me like a highballing semi.
Tell me about the Tommyknockers, he invited again. One hand dropped into his lap below the table and touched the butt.
Shield.
Of the gun. How long before the stuff started to work? 20 minutes? He couldn't remember. And nobody had ever told him about ODing on Valium. Bobby moved the gun a bit toward the pills. Take some more guard. As Jacqueline and Suzanne may have once said, 6 is not enough. He shook out 4 more but left them on the oilcloth.
You were scared shitless out there, weren't you?
Gardner asked.
I saw the way you looked, Bobby. You looked like you thought they were all going to get up and walk. Day of the Dead.
Bobby's new and improved eyes flickered, but her voice remained soft.
But we are walking and talking, Guard. We are back.
Guard picked up the 4 Valiums, bounced them in his palm.
I want you to tell me just one thing, and then I'll take these.
Yes. Just that one thing would in some fashion answer all the other questions, the ones he was never going to get a chance to ask. Maybe that was why he hadn't tried Bobby with a gun yet, because this was what he really needed to know, this one thing.
I want to know what you are,
Gardner said.
Tell me what you are.
4. I'll answer your question, or at least try to, Bobby said. If you'll take those pills you're bouncing in your hand right now. Otherwise you're going bye-bye, Guard. There's something in your mind, I can't quite read it. It's like seeing a shape through gauze, but it makes me extremely nervous. Gardner put the pills in his mouth and swallowed them. More. Gardner shook out another 4 and took them, all the way up to 140 milligrams now, shooting the moon. Bobby seemed to relax. I said Thomas Edison was closer than Albert Einstein, and that's as good a way to put it as any, Bobby said. There are things here in Haven that would have made Albert boggle, I suppose, but Einstein knew what E equals MC squared meant. He understood relativity. He knew things. We make things, fix things. We don't theorize, we build. We're handymen.
You improve things,
Gardner said. He swallowed. When Valium took hold of him, his throat began to feel dry. He remembered that much. When it started to happen, he would have to act. He thought maybe he had already taken a lethal dose, and there were at least 12 pills left in the bottle. Bobby had brightened a little. Improve. That's right, that's what we do. The way we improved Haven. You saw the potential as soon as you got back. No more having to suck the corporate tit. Eventually it's possible to convert totally to, organic storage battery sources. They're renewable and long-lasting.
You're talking about people.
Not just people, although higher species do seem to produce longer-lasting power than the lower ones. It may be a function of spirituality rather than intelligence. The Latin word for it, esse, is probably the best, but even Peter has lasted a remarkably long time, produced a great deal of power, and he's only a dog.
Maybe because of his spirit,
Gardner said.
Maybe because he loved you.
He took the pistol out of his belt. He held it...
Shield.
Against his inner left thigh. That's beside the point, Bobby said, waving the subject of Peter's love or spirituality away. You have decided for some reason that the morality of what we're doing is unacceptable. But then the spectrum of what you think of as morally acceptable behavior is very narrow. It doesn't matter. You'll be going to sleep soon. We have no history, written or oral. When you say the ship crashed here because those in charge were, in effect, fighting over the steering wheel, I feel there's an element of truth in that. But I also feel that perhaps it was meant, fated, to happen. Telepaths are at least to some degree precognitives, Guard, and precognitives are more apt to let themselves be guided by the currents, both large and small, that run through the universe. God is the name some people give those currents, but God's only a word like Tommyknockers or Altair 4. What I mean is, we would almost certainly be long extinct if we hadn't trusted those currents, because we've always been short-tempered, ready to fight. But fight is too general a word. We... Bobby's eyes suddenly glowed a deep, frightful green. Her lips spread in a toothless grin. Gardner's right hand clutched the gun with a sweaty palm. We squabble. Bobby said, Le mot juste, guard.
Good for you,
Gardner said and swallowed. He heard a click. That dryness hadn't just sneaked up. All at once it was just there. Yes, we squabble. We've always squabbled like kids, you could say. Bobby smiled. We're very childlike. That's our good side.
Is it now?
A monstrous image suddenly filled Gardner's head. Grammar school kids heading off to school armed with books and Uzis and Smurf lunchboxes and M16s and apples for the teachers they liked, and fragmentation grenades for those they didn't. And, oh Christ, every one of the girls looked like Patricia McCardle, and every one of the boys looked like Ted the Power Man. Ted the Power Man with greeny, glowing eyes that explained the whole sorry fucking mess, from crusades and crossbow to Reagan's missile-tipped satellites. We squabble. Every now and then we even tussle a bit. We're grown-ups, I guess, but we still have bad tempers like kids do. And we also still like to have fun like kids do. So we satisfied both once by building all these nifty nuclear slingshots. And every now and then we leave a few around for people to pick up. And do you know what? They always do. People like Ted, who are perfectly willing to kill so no woman in Braintree with the wherewithal to buy one, shall want for electricity to run her hairdryer. People like you, guard, who see only minimal drawbacks to the idea of killing for peace. It would be such a dull world without guns and squabbles, wouldn't it? Gardner realized he was getting sleepy. Childlike, she repeated. We fight, but we can also be very generous, as we have here.
Yes, you've been very generous to Haven,
Gardner said, and his jaws abruptly cracked open in a huge, tendon-stretching yawn. Bobby smiled. Anyway, we might have crashed because it was crash time, according to those currents I mentioned. The ship wasn't hurt, of course, and when I started to uncover it, we came back.
Are there more of you out there?
Bobby shrugged. I don't know. And don't care, the shrug said. We're here. There are improvements to be made. That is enough.
That's really all you are?
He wanted to make sure there was no more to it. He was terribly afraid he was taking too long, much too long, but he had to know.
That's all?
What do you mean, all? Is it so little, what we are?
Frankly, yes,
guard said.
You see, I've been looking for the devil outside my life, all my life, because the one inside was so fucking hard to catch. It's hard to spend such a long time thinking you're Homer.
He yawned again hugely. His eyelids had bricks on them.
And discover you were Captain Ahab all the time.
And finally, for the last time, with a kind of desperation, he asked her,
Is that all you are? Just people who fix things up?
I guess so, she said. I'm sorry it's such a letdown for you. Gardner lifted the pistol under the table, and at the same moment felt the drug finally betray him. The shield slipped. Bobby's eyes glowed. No, this time they glared. Her voice, a mental scream, blasted through Gardner's head like a meat cleaver. Gun, he's got a gun, he's got a... chopping through the rising fog. She tried to move. At the same time, she tried to bring the photon pistol to bear on him. Gardner aimed the .45 at Bobby under the table and pulled the trigger. There was only a dry click. The old slug had misfired. Chapter 9. The Scoop. Concluded. 1. John Leandro died. The Scoop did not. David Bright had promised to give Leandro until 4, and that was a promise he had intended to keep. Because it was honorable, of course, but also because he was not sure this was anything he wanted to stick his hand into. It might turn out to be a threshing machine instead of a news story. Nonetheless, he never doubted Johnny Leandro had been telling the truth, or his perception of it, crazed as his story sounded. Johnny was a twerp, Johnny sometimes didn't just jump to conclusions, but Broad jumped them completely. But he wasn't a liar. Even if he had been, Bright didn't believe he was smart enough to fabricate something this woolly. Around 2:30 that afternoon, Bright suddenly began to think of another Johnny. Poor damn Johnny Smith, who had sometimes touched objects and gotten feelings about them. That had been crazy, too, but Bright had believed Johnny Smith, had believed in what Smith said he could do. It was impossible to look into the man's haunted eyes and not believe. Bright was not touching anything which belonged to John Leandro, but he could see his desk across the room, the hood pulled neatly over his word processor terminal, and he began to get a feeling. A very dismal one. He felt that Johnny Leandro might be dead. He called himself an old woman, but the feeling didn't go away. He thought of Leandro's voice, desperate and cracking with excitement. This is my story, and I'm not going to give it up just like that. Thought of Johnny Smith's dark eyes, his trick of constantly rubbing at the left side of his forehead. Bright's eyes were drawn again and again to Leandro's hooded word cruncher. He held out until 3 o'clock. By then, the feeling had become sickening assurance. Leandro was dead. There was just no maybe in it. He might not ever have another genuine premonition in his life, but he was having one now. Not crazy. Not wounded. Not one of the missing. Dead. Bright picked up the phone, and although the number he dialed had a Cleves Mills exchange, both Bobby and Guard would have known it was really long distance. 55 days after Bobby Anderson's stumble in the woods, someone was finally calling the Dallas police. 2. The man Bright talked to at the Cleves Mills State Police Barracks was Andy Torgerson. Bright had known him since college, and he could talk to him without feeling that he had the words News Snoop tattooed on his forehead in bright red letters. Torgerson listened patiently, saying little as Bright told him everything, beginning with Leandro's assignment to the story of the missing cops. His nose bled, his teeth fell out, he got vomiting, and he was convinced that all of this was coming out of the air. Yes, Bright said. Also, this whatever it is in the air improved the shit out of his radio reception. Right. And you think he might be in a lot of trouble? Right again. I think he might be in a lot of trouble too, Dave. It sounds like he's gone Section 8. I know how it sounds. I just don't think that's the way it is. David, Torgerson said in a tone of great patience, it might be possible, at least in a movie, to take over a little town and poison it somehow. But there's a highway that runs through that little town. There's people in that little town and phones. Do you think someone could poison a whole town or shut it off from the outside world with no one the wiser? Old Derry Road isn't really a highway, Bright pointed out, not since they finished the stretch of I-95 between Bangor and Newport 30 years ago. Since then, the old Derry Road has been more like this big deserted landing strip with a yellow line running down the middle of it. You're not trying to tell me nobody's tried to use it lately, are you? No. I'm not trying to tell you much of anything. But Johnny did say he'd found some people who hadn't seen their relatives in Haven for a couple of months, and some people who tried to go in to check on them got sick and had to leave in a hurry. Most of them chalked it up to food poisoning or something. He also mentioned a store in Troy where this old croc is doing a booming business in T-shirts because people have been coming out of Haven with bloody noses and that it's been going on for weeks. Pipe dreams, Torgerson said. Looking across the barracks ready room, he saw the dispatcher sit up abruptly and switch the telephone he was holding to his left hand so he could write. Something had happened somewhere, and from the goosed look on the dispatcher's face, it wasn't a fender bender or purse snatching. Of course, people being what they were, something always did happen, and as little as he liked to admit it, something might be happening in Haven as well. The whole thing sounded as mad as the tea party in Alice, but David had never impressed him as a member of the Fruits and Nuts Brigade. At least, not a card-carrying one, he amended. Maybe they are, Bright was saying, but their essential pipe dreaminess can be proved or disproved by a quick trip out to Haven by one of your guys. He paused. I'm asking as a friend. I'm not one of Johnny's biggest fans, but I'm worried about him. Torgerson was still looking into the dispatcher's office, where Smokey Dawson was now ratchet-jawing away a mile a minute. Smokey looked up, saw Torgerson looking, and held up one hand, all the fingers splayed. "Wait," the gesture said. "Something big." "I'll see that someone takes a ride out there before the end of the day," Torgerson said. "I'll go myself, if I can, but..." "If I was to come over to Derry, could you pick me up?" "I'll have to call you," Torgerson said. "Something's happening here. Dawson looks like he's having a heart attack." "I'll be here," Bright said. "I'm seriously worried, Andy."
"I know," Torgerson said. There had not even been a flicker of interest from Bright when Torgerson mentioned something big was apparently up, and that wasn't like him at all. "I'll call you."
Dawson came out of the dispatcher's office. It was high summer, and except for Torgerson, who was catching, the entire complement of troopers on duty was out on the roads. The two of them had the barracks to themselves.
"Jesus, Andy," Dawson said. "I don't know what to make of this."
"Of what?" He felt the old tight excitement building in the center of his chest. Torgerson had his own intuitions from time to time, and they were accurate within the narrow band of his chosen profession. "Something big, all right." Dawson looked as if someone had hit him with a brick. That old tight excitement. Most of him hated it, but part of him was a junkie for it. And now that part of him made a sudden, exhilarating connection. It was irrational, but it was also irrefutable. This had something to do with what Bright had just called about.
"Somebody get the Dormouse and the Mad Hatter. Plop the Dormouse into the pot,"
he thought.
"I think the tea party's getting underway."
"There's a forest fire in Haven," Dawson said. "Must be a forest fire. Report says it's probably in Big Injun Woods."
"Probably? What's this probably shit?"
"The report came from a fire watch station in China Lakes," Dawson said. "They logged smoke over an hour ago, around 2 o'clock. They called Derry Fire Alert and Ranger Station 3 in Newport. Engines were sent from Newport, Unity, China, Woolwich."
"Troy, Albin, what about them? Christ, they border the town."
"Troy and Albin didn't report."
"Haven itself?"
"The phones are dead."
"Come on, Smokey, don't break my balls. Which phones?"
"All of them." He looked at Torgerson and swallowed. "Of course, I haven't verified that for myself. But that isn't the nuttiest part. I mean, it's pretty crazy, but..."
"Go on and spell it."
Dawson did. By the time he finished, Torgerson's mouth was dry. Ranger Station 3 was in charge of fire control in Penobscot County, at least as long as a fire in the woods didn't develop a really broad front. The first task was surveillance, the second was spotting, the third was locating. It sounded easy. It wasn't. In this case, the situation was even worse than usual, because the fire had been reported from 20 miles away. Station 3 called for conventional fire engines, because it was still technically possible that they might be of some use. They hadn't been able to reach anyone from Haven who could tell them one way or the other. As far as the fire wardens at 3 knew, the fire could be in Frank Spruce's east pasture or a mile into the woods. They also sent out 3 two-man crews of their own in 4-wheel drive vehicles armed with topographical maps and a spotter plane. Dawson had called them Big Injun Woods, but Chief Wawivoka was long gone, and today the new non-racist name on the topographical maps seemed more apt. Burning Woods. The Unity fire engines arrived first, unfortunately for them. 3 or 4 miles from the Haven town line, with a growing pall of smoke still at least 8 miles distant, the men on the pumper began to feel ill. Not just one or two, the whole 7-man crew. The driver pressed on until he suddenly lost consciousness behind the wheel. The pumper ran off Unity's old schoolhouse road and crashed into the woods, still 1.5 miles shy of Haven. 3 men were killed in the crash, 2 bled to death. The 2 survivors had literally crawled out of the area on hands and knees, puking as they went.
"They said it was like being gassed," Dawson said.
"That was them on the phone?"
"Christ, no. The 2 still alive are on their way to Derry home in an ambulance. That was Station 3. They're trying to get things together, but right now it looks like there's a hell of a lot more going on in Haven than a forest fire.
But that's spreading out of control. The weather service says there's going to be an easterly wind by nightfall, and it don't seem like no one can get in there to put it out."
"What else do they know?"
"Jack shit!" Smokey Dawson exclaimed, as if personally offended. "People who get close to Haven get sick. Closer you get, the sicker you are. That's all anyone knows, besides something's burning."
Not a single fire unit had gotten into Haven. Those from China and Woolwich had gotten closest. Torgerson went to the anemometer on the wall and thought he saw why. They'd been coming from upwind. If the air in and around Haven was poisoned, the wind was blowing it the other way.
Dear God, what if it's something radioactive?
If it was, it was like no kind of radiation Torgerson had ever heard of. The Woolwich units had reported 100% engine failure as they approached the Haven town line. China had sent a pumper and a tanker. The pumper quit on them, but the tanker kept running, and the driver had somehow managed to reverse it out of the danger zone, with vomiting men stuffed into the cab, clinging to the bumpers, and spread-eagled on top of the tank. Most had nosebleeds, a few earbleeds, one had a ruptured eye. All of them had lost teeth. What kind of fucking radiation is that? End of side 16. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.